This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. There are few characters in history more reviled than Judas Iscariot. The name Judas itself is now synonymous with betrayal. But have we misunderstood the man who Scripture says offered Jesus the kiss of death? A newly unveiled text suggests Judas may in fact have been the only apostle who fully understood the message of Christ. In the Gospel of Judas, the betrayer acts at the request of Jesus, allowing both men to fulfill their destinies. Bart Ehrman is chair of the Department of Religious Studies at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and he contributed to the National Geographic book, The Gospel of Judas. Bart Ehrman joins us in the studio now to talk about the gospel. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
This particular gospel has quite a history. Tell us about when it was discovered and what it's been through.
Well, yeah, it's quite an interesting story. The manuscript was discovered in the late 1970s, probably 1978. In Egypt, in an area called Middle Egypt, so south of Cairo and north of Luxor. It passed into the hands of antiquities dealers, people who buy and sell ancient goods, and it stayed in the hands of antiquities dealers until actually till the year 2000. It spent 16 years in a safe deposit box on Long Island, actually, in Hicksville, New York, where an antiquities dealer had deposited it because he couldn't get his asking price for it. He wanted $3 million for this manuscript, and nobody was willing to pay it. So he simply deposited it in New York, which was a disaster, as it turns out, because the humidity in New York got to the manuscript and it virtually destroyed it.
It's a parchment.
It's actually papyrus.
Oh.
It has a leather cover, and it's written on papyrus. It's 66 pages long. There are actually four different texts within this manuscript. The one that everybody's interested in, though, is the Gospel of Judas, which takes up 26 of the pages.
And you're pretty sure it's authentic?
It's absolutely authentic. National Geographic asked me to help them authenticate it in December of 2004, and so I flew to Geneva where it was being restored, and I looked at it, and there was no doubt at all. This is an ancient manuscript. It looks a lot like manuscripts I know of from the New Testament from about the 4th century or so, and after I and a couple of other experts looked at it, they subjected it to carbon-14 dating, and the carbon-14 dating put it right around the year 300.
And this is not part of the Nag Hammadi find back in the late 1940s.
I think when it was first discovered, some people suspected that this might have been a missing book from the Nag Hammadi library, but now it's quite clear that it's not that. It's a related book because it's also written in Coptic, an ancient Egyptian language, as are the Nag Hammadi books. And it was found in roughly the same area of Egypt, but it's actually a different find.
I was going to ask you about the significance of that area. What do you make of the fact that it was found where it was?
I think Christianity in Egypt was very diverse in the first several centuries, and that the Christians in Egypt, in various cities and towns, had wildly alternate forms of Christianity and a variety of books available to them that were allegedly by and about apostles. And so this is another example of that kind of thing.
Well, another example, but perhaps the wildest version in many ways. Talk about what this text says and why there's so much interest in it.
Well, so it's called the Gospel of Judas. It's actually, that's the title given in the manuscript itself. Titles in ancient manuscripts come at the end of a book instead of at the beginning, the way we entitle books. And this is a gospel that's largely about Judas, and especially about his relationship with Jesus. It's a gospel that takes place over the last days of Jesus' life, and it involves a number of conversations that Jesus has with his disciples, all 12, but especially privately with Judas Iscariot. And it turns out that according to this text, Judas isn't the villain of the story. He's the hero of the story. He's the closest disciple to Jesus, and he's the only one who understands what Jesus is all about, who he is, where he's come from, and what his mission is. And as it turns out, the betrayal in this text isn't an act of treachery. According to this document, Judas betrays Jesus because that's exactly what Jesus wants him to do.
In many ways, then, does this overturn, if this were accepted as canonical, and I'm sure it won't be, but if it were, would it overthrow any ideas in Christian theology?
Well, in fact, this text stands diametrically opposed to the views found in the canon of the New Testament, because according to this document, the creator of this world is not the Father of Jesus. So Jesus is not the Son of the Son of God in the sense that he's the Son of the Creator. The Creator in this document is said to have been a lower, inferior, and somewhat evil deity. There are greater gods above the Creator of this world who are purely spirit. The Creator of this world is called a couple of names in this text. Nebro is one of the names, and that name means rebel. And he's all the one who created humans is called Sackless, which is a word that means fool. So our world is created by a rebel and a fool. Obviously, that isn't a traditional Christian theology.
This also casts a new light on one of the more difficult, I think, moments in Scripture at the Last Supper. You can tell me which gospel this is, when the apostles are all saying, Jesus says, well, one of you will betray me tonight, and they're all sort of in consternation. Well, who's it going to be? And he says, Jesus says, it is the one who I will share this bread, or the one who dips the bread with me. And then he hands the bread to Judas, and they dip the bread. So it should be pretty obvious to me, but then Peter seems to be lost on the whole thing and says, well, but really, who will it be?
Yes. Yes, in the Gospels of the New Testament, it is a little odd because Jesus knows who's going to betray him, and he actually predicts it, but the other disciples don't seem to know. In the Gospel of John, in particular, Jesus tells Judas what you must do quickly. Some people over the years have thought that meant that Jesus and Judas had some kind of agreement about the betrayal. That's certainly the case in this new gospel. In this new gospel, Judas is simply doing what Jesus wants him to do. At a key moment in this gospel, Jesus is saying that Judas, in fact, is going to do a great deed that will make him surpass the other disciples. His exact words are, he says to Judas, "You will exceed all the others, for you will sacrifice the man that clothes me." So the idea in this is that Jesus is a trapped spirit in a body of flesh, and Judas is going to make it possible for him to escape.
Also cast in a new light the moment in the gospel where Peter, Jesus says to Peter, look, I have to do this. One of the things I'm going to have to do is go to Jerusalem, and I'm going to have to die. And Peter says, we'll never let it happen. And Jesus says, get behind me, Satan.
Yeah, in the New Testament Gospels, especially in the Gospel of Mark, the disciples never seem to understand. Jesus repeatedly says he has to go to Jerusalem and die. The disciples never get it. This theme of the disciples not getting it is played even to a greater degree in the Gospel of Judas, where the disciples not only never get it during Jesus' ministry, they never ever get it. They assume that Jesus is the Son of the Creator God, and only Judas realizes that he comes from a higher realm, above the Creator God. The other disciples are not bound for salvation. Only Judas is.
Are there any other parts in this text, any other passages that are similar to passages in the canonical Gospels?
The passage that's closest is the passage where there's the actual betrayal. This gospel doesn't end with the death and resurrection of Jesus. In fact, in this gospel, there's no thought that Jesus ever would be raised from the dead, because the point of this gospel is that Jesus is a divine spark that needs to be set free from the body. So the body's not going to come back to life. The body's going to die, and his spark will be released to the divine realm. The death isn't narrated either, because that's a foregone conclusion that he's going to die. That's the whole point. But what is narrated is the betrayal scene. It's a little bit different from the Gospels of the New Testament because it's not in a garden. It's actually in a house where the authorities arrive and they find only Judas there. And they say, what are you doing here? You're a disciple of Jesus. Then Judas explains why he's there, and he tells them where to find Jesus. And he hands them Jesus over to them. They give him some money. And that's the end of the story. He handed him over, and then you get the title, The Gospel of Judas.
So does it come as a spontaneous act, or was this premeditated as it is in the other Gospels? He arranges for the 30 pieces of silver and then goes and does the deed.
In this Gospel, there's no prearrangement that for money, and it's not indicated that Judas does it for the money. In the Gospels of the New Testament, there are actually different motives that are ascribed to Judas. In Mark's Gospel, the earliest Gospel we have, There's no explanation of what Judas's motive is. In the Gospel of Matthew, we're told, though, that he did it for the cash. He did it so that he'd get 30 pieces of silver. In the Gospel of Luke, he does it because Satan enters into him and compels him to do it. In the New Gospel, the Gospel of Judas, the reason Judas does it is for none of the above. He does it because Jesus wants him to do it, and so he's simply doing his master's will.
And does he commit suicide?
No. You know, in the New Testament Gospels, the only Gospel that talks about Judas' death is the Gospel of Matthew, where Judas feels remorse for what he's done, and he goes out and hangs himself. There's also an account of Judas's death in the book of Acts in the New Testament, written by the same author who wrote Luke. But in Acts, Judas doesn't hang himself. What happens is that he bursts open and his bowels fall out on the ground, his intestines spill out on the ground, and so he dies that way. In the Gospel of Judas, he doesn't commit suicide. In fact, it doesn't say that he dies, but he does have a vision in the Gospel of Judas prior to the end in which he sees the other disciple stoning him to death. This is emblematic of their hatred of him, and Jesus assures him that, yes, he'll be hated by the others, but he'll be the only one who attains salvation.
This has caused quite a stir in the secular world. How have theologians accepted this new gospel?
Well, the reception has been pretty much what one would expect with a gospel like this. I think very conservative evangelical scholars are saying that this adds nothing new to our knowledge about Jesus and Judas. It's a gospel written in the second century. It's not as old as the Gospels of the New Testament, and so it's not particularly valuable. The scholars who are not evangelical Christians are looking upon this as a terrific find. I mean, this is a very old gospel, one of the oldest gospels that we have. And even though it may not tell us much about the historical Judas and the historical Jesus, it tells us a lot about what Christians were talking about and what Christians were saying about Jesus and Judas in the second century, a time period about which we have very few sources. And so this is an absolutely spectacular find for anyone interested in the history of early Christianity. In my judgment, it's the most important archaeological discovery of the last 60 years.
Does it change for you the life of Jesus and the meaning of the Gospels, having read this now?
It doesn't change for me my understanding of who the historical Jesus was. It does point in directions that one might find in the Gospels themselves. As I pointed out earlier, there are hints in the Gospels that maybe Jesus had made an arrangement with Judas to betray him. This hint is played out in a number of modern understandings of Jesus. For example, in The Last Temptation of Christ, the Kotsinsakis novel that was made into a Scorsese movie, there Judas and Jesus make this arrangement for Judas to betray him. That's exactly what's going on in the Gospel of Judas. There are hints of that in the New Testament Gospels, and maybe we should take those hints a little more seriously.
Bart Ehrman, thank you very much.
Okay, my pleasure.
Bart Ehrman is chair of the Department of Religious Studies at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill.